North Georgia Business Radio presents the best of Business Radio X. Business Radio X serves as the voice of business in cities around the country, and every day Business Radio X lets you hear from business leaders, executives, managers, and business owners, allowing them to share their stories of success. I'm Mike Salmond, and today on the show, we're going to share some of the conversations heard recently in our Business Radio X studio in Gwinnett County. Today, you'll hear about some of the biggest mistakes that cost small business owners money. Also, an asset protection expert explains how to stop your family from fighting over your stuff when you pass. And later on, life as a professional bull rider. We'll hear from one of the biggest stars in the business. But up first, a new super mall is coming to North Atlanta, but it's unlike any other mall you've ever been to. It's a home improvement super mall, and on this week's episode of Power Play, the monthly show that highlights sponsors of the Atlanta Gladiators hockey team, Michael Fisher with Improve USA explained the new concept.
We are building a super mall for home improvement. Our mall is going to be about 418,000 square feet with 429 permanent display units for home improvement, solely for home improvement. But what we're going to do is different in here is you'll be able to come to into our mall and do a one-stop shop. So anytime you're looking for renovation to do your home or remodeling an office or a building, you'll be able to do a one-stop shop instead of running around the city looking for products or having your contractor, your GC, telling you where to go. The big advantage with us will be is that it's not just for retail. It's also going to be for wholesale distribution and also for manufacturers. So if a manufacturer wanted to show off their product or have a line that they wanted to show and to bring out to the public, then this would be a great place for them to be in.
And this is still in development.
That's correct. So we're at 6945 Button Gwinnett Drive in Doraville, just down the street on High 85. The beautiful part about what we're going to do is you'll be able to come in and get what you want to do, okay, and have information that you would never have access to before. Now you will.
Okay, and when do you open your doors?
Our opening doors, we're scheduling for 2/21, 2/22. Late 2/21, early 2/22 is realistic. We just started our demolition about a month ago. Our first building is down. We have 21 acres of land, so building number one is down. And building number two will start in about 4 months' time period.
Okay, and you say talking February 21st or 22nd, or are you talking February 2021?
No, we're probably talking more realistic January, February of 2/22.
Okay.
We need approximately 18 months to build.
So this is going to be massive.
This is going to be big. So just, and if you can just imagine, a Walmart store is about 100,000 square feet. We're doing four of them under one roof.
Wow. Where did this concept come from? Has this been done anywhere else?
Well, the first concept was from Toronto. Our founder and developer had a dream that he put together. It really started out with him renovating his home in Toronto. And he was just frustrated because for 6 months he's running around from one end of the city to the other. And he says, why can't I have one location to do everything I need to do? So through his dream and partners that he put together, he built the first one in Toronto, Canada. First one is about 380,000 square feet, also a massive structure with 400 units. This one here is a little bit bigger, and we're going to have 429 units.
You're calling it a super mall.
Yes.
When you walk in the doors, will it appear as a typical mall where you'll have different storefronts, or are there sections? What will it look like when you walk
in? If you walked into a home show type of environment, okay,
right,
this will be the same thing. The big difference with us is which will be great, is where when you walk into a home show and, you know, you're there for 3-4 days and you walk around and, you know, if you find something, that's great. But if you don't and you may, you know, in, or that's another problem. You know, like if you run into a situation where you found a business card or that you wanted to deal with somebody and you misplaced that business card and you go back to see where that person is, guess what? The show is over, so you've lost that opportunity. With us, it's permanent, so you're going to be there year-round. The also unique difference with us is we're selling these as condos, not as rental units. So a little different concept. So this is a permanent home show too for people or vendors, even manufacturers that want to be there year-round. So they're not moving up and running around from show to show to show. That becomes very expensive. This is a permanent location. So we're going to drive traffic into this mall as a permanent situation.
Is there going to be food in there as well?
Yes.
Things like that?
Yes. Very unique to this mall compared to the Toronto Mall is that we're going to have 8 restaurants upstairs. Which is going to be like a food court. We're also going to have one major chain store restaurant down, which is 7,000 square feet. The other things that I'm going to add to this is that in the small, we've added a business center that's about 44,000 square feet, which will consist of six meeting rooms, 260-person auditorium room. So, you know, just imagine this is all under one facility. You're going to have a daycare, which is free to the public. You're going to have spas and nail spas for women to take care of their needs. So basically, it's become a one-stop shop. Very exciting time for us.
Absolutely. You just supersized everything, made it even bigger.
Correct.
You mentioned how you guys are in the process of building this super mall right now, and already you're out here in the market getting the word out well before you open the doors, and so you're a sponsor now of the Gladiator.
Correct.
So obviously you're making a concerted effort to really get the message out quickly or very early,
right,
rather than waiting till, okay, we're opening in a week. No, you're opening down the road.
We're open down the road, yes. Because this is such a large project. So what we're really doing right now is trying to get the word out, let everybody know that we're coming, and we really are coming, because this one here is going to be a staple, not just for the Atlanta area, but we're also going to grow across the U.S. with this as well. We're also looking at New Jersey and Dallas as well as the next major markets for us once we get this one up and running. Our commitment is to the community. It'll be one of the first one of its kind in the U.S. I think this will be the prime showcase for the city of Atlanta and also the state of Georgia, and I think also part of the U.S. I think once people see what we're doing, there's going to be a lot of excitement. And
sure,
I think, you know, besides traffic and people coming through, there's so much more that's going on that we don't even realize, but it's coming.
You could have gone anywhere with your first U.S. location.
Yes, we could have.
Why Atlanta?
Why Atlanta? I'm glad you asked. Our owners looked at Atlanta as a prime market. It's one of the fastest growing markets in the U.S. But a lot of reasons that we looked at Atlanta very closely, because it mirror imaged a lot of the Toronto market to us, especially to our ownership. You know, population very close, you know, between 7 and 8 million people. You know, the market's very, very similar. It's the culture, the multinationalism that we have in the city of Atlanta very much echoes and looks at a mirror image of right hand, left hand to Toronto. So that was very important for us. And we wanted to be in a market that A is growing, B is that it would be able to handle what we offer to the people. And Atlanta more than does that. If you look at Atlanta very closely as far as economics, it's probably one of the fastest, one of the top three cities in all of the U.S. that has steady growth. I met with one of the congressmen about 2 weeks ago at a convention, and he was kind enough to share some ideas with me. And he was saying we've got more jobs than we have men and women that can fill those jobs. I mean, what a problem to have, right? And that is one of the major reasons why we're here. We know the Atlanta market's growing. We know the Atlanta market has tremendous amount of upgrowth, not just in new construction, but also tremendous amount more in residential reconstruction and refurbs. And also office buildings are being redone now and converting either to apartments or they're, you know, redoing office buildings. So to us, this is all renovations. And this is what this mall is. This mall is truly one word, renovations. We're not going to have people selling shoes or computers or televisions. You know, those type of things are not going to happen in our mall. To the consumer and to the builders and interior decorators, it's going to be a great, great stepping stone for them and a great asset to have in the back of their pockets.
Yeah. Well, I agree. I think you've hit a home run with Atlanta and will hit a home run with Atlanta.
Right.
But I want to talk about who you are targeting, because you mentioned the interior designers and people that are into home improvement. But it sounds like even if you know nothing about home improvement, this is going to be a place that's going to be excited to go to.
Absolutely. It's just the way you go to a general mall, like one of the large anchor malls, like, you know, Phipps Mall or the Georgia Mall or any of the other malls like that. This will become the go-to place. Besides just home renovations, people are going to come to this mall to figure out what is going on here. What is the buzz? And the buzz is going to be that if you realize that 50% of the population in any city at some point renovate their homes, if it's their bathrooms or it's their kitchens or it's their walls, somehow they're doing something. So when they're going to come into Improve USA's mall, super mall, is by the time they walk in and the time they walk out, two things are going to happen. One is that they've made an agreement with somebody to come to look at their place and to get a quote and do their work. Or two, they have a real good idea what they want to do and how they're going to get there.
You know what upsets me a little bit is that I got to wait so long before you're ready for us to come see it. I mean, you're like teasing us. It's like, I can't wait that long.
Well, let me tell you, we can't wait to have this up and running. And I'm personally excited because I got involved in this program to do something that I've never done before. And to me, it's exciting. And I think this is the way of the future. You know, we hear malls not doing well and stuff like that. But let me tell you, this is going to change everything. We've got the marketing budget to go out and push it out. We're going to have the right clientele to come in. They're the right partners with the right products for the people. And we're going to bring people in. And this will change all of Doraville in a very, very short period of time. So we're really coming. And I can tell you, that's the exciting part for me.
For those that would like to read up more about Improve USA, where can they go?
They can go to www.improveusa.com, or they can contact us directly. Phone number would be 770-662-0000. And you can ask for myself or any one of our team members, and we'd be happy to help you guys out.
And that's Michael Fisher with Improve USA on the Atlantic Gladiators monthly show, Power Play, on Business Radio X. To hear more, visit businessradiox.com, enter PowerPlay into the search bar, and all of the PowerPlay episodes will appear. Coming up next, who gets your stuff when you die? The answer is not as simple as you might expect. And later on in the show, it's tax season. A tax expert shares the biggest mistakes business owners make that could cost them thousands of dollars in taxes. And what's it like to ride an 1,800-pound bull? We'll ask one of the biggest stars in professional bull riding. More of North Georgia Business Radio and the best of Business Radio X after this. Welcome back to North Georgia Business Radio and the best of Business Radio X. So who gets all of your valuable assets when you die? If you don't plan accordingly, your family could be left out in the cold, and the court system may end up deciding who gets what. On Senior Salute Radio, asset protection attorney Victoria Collier explained what you need to know about probate court.
What's the probate process?
The probate process is a process that happens when people die. By and large, you'll hear out there a lot that people want to avoid probate, but they don't really even understand what that means. One, they don't understand what it means to avoid it, or even what it is.
Right.
So I would like to talk about that. When people die and they own individually held assets, which means they don't have a co-owner on them, and it also means they didn't, like a joint owner, like on a bank account.
Okay.
Also, they don't have what's called a named beneficiary. Like life insurance, often you'll name a beneficiary. Or retirement funds, you'll name a beneficiary. That's called payable on death or transfer on death accounts. But if you just own an asset by yourself without those beneficiaries, then your estate, when you die, must go through probate. There's no alternative when you own individually held assets. So let's use an example. If I own a house and it's just in my name, and the deed says Victoria Collier owns this house, and that's it. And then when I die, someone has to go and file a petition, paperwork, with the county court where I owned that house when I died, or where I was a resident when I died. Because without that paper being filed with the court, no one has the legal authority to be able to manage that house for me. So they can't sell it. They don't have access to my bank accounts to pay my mortgage if I have one. They can't even maintain the house, even if they don't want to sell it. And they certainly can't transfer it to whoever I want it to go to. And so it's the legal process called probate that gives them that authority. Now, we'll hear all the time, but I have a will. I thought I was taken care of.
Right.
Right? Having a will is great. And the difference between having a will and not having a will doesn't have anything to do with probate as to whether or not you have to do it. What makes the difference between having a will and not having a will is how your process through probate goes. And it goes smoother when you have one versus not having one. As an example, when you have a will, you get to name who that person is that's going to court to manage your affairs for you. So if I have three kids and one of them can't manage their own bank account, I don't want them to be the one who goes. If I have one that is in England, it wouldn't be as easy for that one to go. So I get to choose who that is. Maybe it's not any of my kids. Maybe it's my best friend or my lawyer or whomever. But I get that choice. Whereas if I don't have a will, the court gets to make that choice. And usually it's the first one who rushes up to the courthouse to do it. So it could be that child who can't manage finances and needs access to mine as soon as possible, right?
Right.
So the court controls that process, whereas if I have a will, I get to control that process.
And when you say court, do you mean probate?
The probate court, okay. Correct. And the other two things that are a major difference between having a will and not having a will, as it means going through the probate process, is I get to choose my person, but also I, in my will, get to waive certain actions, which means saving costs through the process and saving delay through the process. Whereas if I don't have a will, you're going to be subject to all costs and there can be a delay. The third and most important is that in my will, I get to decide who gets my stuff and on what term, not the court. And so I get to say if I wanted to, for example, go to my three kids, and maybe I want one of them to get it outright. Mm-hmm. It means I just hand them the money at death, right? But the other one might have had a bankruptcy and they're still tied in that, and I don't want my money to go to pay off their debts. I want them to get the benefit of my money, but not to pay off their debts. So my will might actually have what's called a credit protection trust for that child until their bankruptcy is all done, and then they get it. I have another child that is always on the brink of divorce. Well, I don't want my money to go to her ex if they ever get divorced. So I want to put it in such a way that she would benefit from it, but it not be subject to divorce. When you die without a will, you don't have all that discretion. It just goes to those people, and then it could go to their creditors, it could go to their exes, it can do all that kind of stuff. And it might not even go to the people you think it should go to. Let's use an example, Prince, the artist formerly known as Prince, the one who died known as Prince. His estate was somewhere between $100 million to $300 million. He did not have a will. And people believe they know where their stuff would go, even without a will. It would go to your heirs at law, okay? So we think about who are our heirs at law. Well, in Georgia, if you're married and you have kids, you die, who gets your stuff without a will? You died without a will.
Right.
Who would get your stuff?
I would think my spouse and or my kids.
Okay. So you said and or my kids. No, you got to give me an answer. Who gets it when you die? Well, the answer is you don't know.
Yeah.
And most people don't. But many people will tell me, well, it goes to my spouse. And if my spouse isn't alive, then to my kids.
Right.
And it's wrong. When you die in Georgia and you have a spouse and kids, it will go to the spouse and kids. Depending on how many kids you have will depend on the proportion that the spouse gets. So, for example, if you have a spouse and one kid, they will split 50-50. If you have a spouse and two or more children, the spouse gets no less than one-third and all the children share the other two-thirds. That can be very problematic, specifically if your children are minors and they can't receive money. And then that's all tied up in the court system until they're 18 years old. And then at 18, it's just they're handed a check as if they can manage it.
Is a will enough these days?
A will is and can be enough for many people. But without knowing what assets somebody owns, without knowing what their goals are, a will may not be enough. And sometimes people do need trusts for their particular situation. And there are ways to avoid probate, and a trust is one of those ways to avoid probate. And so if someone came to me and said, I want to avoid probate, then I would say, well, let's talk about the different ways to avoid probate.
And that's just part of the conversation with Victoria Collier on Senior Salute Radio. To hear the entire interview, visit businessradiox.com, select the Gwinnett Studio, and then click on Senior Salute. Well, coming up next, life as a professional bull rider. We'll ask Georgia's very own PBR star, Sean Willingham, what it's like to mount an 1,800-pound bull, and just how crazy do you have to be?
Welcome back to North Georgia Business Radio and the best of Business Radio X, where we are sharing some of the on-air interviews from this past week. Professional bull riding is in town this weekend as the PBR, the Professional Bull Riders, are competing at the Infinite Energy Arena in Duluth. One of the biggest stars on the tour is Georgia's very own Sean Willingham, who's been crazy enough to ride bulls for over 20 years now. Sean joined us in the Gwinnett Business Radio X studio only days ahead of this weekend's event. For those that don't know what bull riding is, explain what that is. It sounds dangerous. It is dangerous.
It is very dangerous, the most dangerous sport in the world.
Some people might be confused between bull riding and rodeo. Rodeo is where they're trying to rope the calves and things like that. Bull riding, you're getting on these animals that don't want you on their backs.
Bull riding only. No roping, no horses. There'll be one horse in the arena, and his job is to get the bull out if he's trying to act honoring and don't want to leave the pen, you know, so we can move on with the show. But other than that, you know, this is the best of the best, and, yeah, we're there to try to ride some crazy, angry beasts. You don't want to miss out. I mean, it's totally different from any rodeo you've ever seen. This is the best of the best, guys coming from Brazil, Australia, Canada, and, of course, the U.S. as well to compete.
The best bull riders in the world stay on the animal for how long?
We have to ride for 8 seconds. We're judged on the ride for 8 seconds. 1 to 50 points for how well the bull performs, and then 1 to 50 points for how well I perform. So a total of 100 points is an option, is the highest score you can get, which has only been done once ever. So you see a 90-point bull ride, that's very good.
Okay.
Normally your average score is going to be mid-range of mid-80s, 85, 86.
As far as technique, you hold on with one hand, with a rope of some sort?
Yes, one hand only. We have a rope we put in our hand. We get it sticky with pine rosin, I guess would be the best way to explain it. We put a bunch of that gummy stuff on our bull rope. That gives us a little something extra to hold on to, a little better grip, I guess, because those bulls are pretty big and strong, and they can just jerk that rope right out of your hand. One hand down, the other hand has to be in the air. For 8 seconds, you can't touch the bull or the ground, or you're disqualified before 8 seconds.
And so when you do get knocked off that bull, clowns and the guy on the horse, they want to get you away from that bull as quickly as possible so you don't get trampled.
Yep. That's when the bull riding really starts, when the getting off part. The riding part is pretty simple, but then when you get off of the bull, you still have to get away and be out of harm's way. So we have bullfighters. Their job is strictly, after that whistle goes, or even before the whistle goes, they see us in a bad predicament, we're coming off the bull, they'll move in there to distract the bull so they're a better target other than the rider.
You want to be on for at least 8 seconds, you said, to qualify?
Yes.
Do you try to stay on as long as possible, or once the 8 seconds is up, you can dismount?
I'm pulling the trigger as soon as possible.
Really? Okay.
So it's
not about the length of time, it's just at least 8 seconds.
Because they're just going to judge you in the 8 seconds. If you wind up riding the bull for 16 or longer, it don't matter. It's not going to help your score out at all, because the judges are probably going to quit watching as soon as the whistle blows.
You've been doing this since you were 18 years old, and you've been doing it for how long?
23 years total.
23 years. So I'm sure there have been plenty of times where you've been injured.
Yes. You know, I've had my fair share, but considering the long amount of time that I've rode bulls, I think I've been pretty fortunate. Had some bad ones, you know. Of course, in my younger years, I broke my ankle a few times, cracked my skull. Well, it was pretty bad. Broken neck. That was a good one, too, as well. That wasn't that long ago.
How'd you get into bull riding? You said as a kid, you knew this is what you wanted to do. Talk about growing up. Did you grow up in, because you're from Somerville, Georgia. Is that where you kind of grew up?
I was born in Norman, Oklahoma.
Okay.
I moved back to Georgia when I was six. It's where my dad grew up at. It's where I lived. You know, it's where I grew up in Menlo, Georgia, which is close to Somerville. There's about 3 or 4 towns within 7 miles. You know, I grew up playing sports. I always dreamed about playing basketball in the NBA. That's what I wanted to do. You know, I played baseball and football as well, but I just didn't have that passion. We went to a hometown rodeo. That's the biggest thing that happens there in Somerville, Georgia, for the summer. And then the bull riding starts, and they make a big scene, you know. All right, it's time for the bull riding. You know, they kind of kick it into a higher gear. One thing led to the next. I knew my dad knew the guy that put on the rodeo, and so we just kept aggravating him. You know, hey, we all want to ride bulls. We want to go get on a bull. And so, of course, they was like, no, y'all are crazy. There's no need, and y'all even think about that. We found a place in Alabama, and we all went over there and got on. There was 6 of us.
A real bull.
A real bull. There was 6 of us went together. After that first day of getting on, I was the only one to go back and do it again.
You were hooked.
The rest of my buddies, you know, this is my good friends, you know, that I played ball with growing up, and they're very athletic as well, but they just didn't care nothing about going. You know, they would go watch me do it, but they didn't want a part of it.
And now here all these years later, they see you and you're a world-class bull rider.
And they're still like, man, they're probably like, he's crazy. Why did he ever pursue that sport and keep going through with it? But, you know, it's been fun. It took over pretty quick for me. I was very interested, and I found out very quick it was a lot harder than I thought. I don't care how big you are, how strong you are, you're not going to overpower an 1,800-pound bull. There's right. No way possible. You know, everything's off timing and reaction, so you want your reactions to be pretty fast.
When you're on this bull, you said, what, 1,800 pounds?
Yes.
You have no idea which way it's going to move or buck, so I assume you want to be kind of loose when you're on top of the animal.
Yes, you don't want to clamp up or, you know, grab a real deep hold of the bull. Because then it's just, if he changes it up, you're locked down on that one direction, and then he's going to throw you off when he changes it up. So you kind of want to go with the flow.
We're talking with Sean Willingham, professional bull rider here on Gwinnett Business Radio. Good money can be made in this sport. You were telling me before the show there was one rider who's made about $500,000 just over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think we do 28 majors a year. They pay $30,000 every weekend. We have four majors that pay $100,000. And then we go to the world finals, and it will pay $300,000 just to win that event by itself. And then if you win the world title in points throughout the year, you get a $1 million bonus.
You can make a nice living.
It's not a bad living, is it?
No.
There's definitely, you know, they reward you if you win.
In lieu of the IRS listening to this program, what's been the best year you ever had?
I think my best year was right at $300,000. Just in winnings, you know, that's not counting the sponsors that I had as well.
How about for lean years for the bull riders? I mean, do some of these guys have other jobs? I mean, how do you get by when you're not winning?
Most guys that I know don't really have a day job because bull riding is 24/7 job in my book. Even if we're at home, you know, we're training for the weekend or training for the week.
Well, talk about how that works. You're a happily married man. What's it like to be a professional bull rider? I'm assuming you're traveling all the time.
I leave on Fridays and come home, you know, Sundays, sometimes Monday. And then I'm at home, you know, until Friday. So 4 days a week, you know, when the events are close enough, they'll go with me as well. But it's definitely hard on the wife when I'm gone with two kids there as well, you know, because it goes from having four hands to only two, and there's two kids. So when they act out, she's don't have enough hands, you know, to right. tie them down, I guess.
Where do you live now?
Somerville,
so
Georgia.
You're still up in Somerville?
Yes, sir.
Okay, let me ask some dumb questions. So let's say you've got a bull riding event in Phoenix. And then the next week you're in Los Angeles or whatever. Are you responsible to get yourself from Somerville to these areas, or does the tour take care of all your travel to these places?
We take care of all of it on our own, the travel as well.
Wow. So there's pressure to win.
So there is, because, you know, I'm going to be out, you know, plane ticket in the hotel room. You're going to be out almost $1,000 every weekend just to travel. So if you don't win anything, you know, you're losing money.
Talk to those maybe that have never been to one of your events, what they can expect when they walk through the doors.
You know, we put on a show. The PBR, it is a show. It's like a concert tour. We have bull riding, you know, as well with the concert tour. So there's a whole crew that comes every week, and they'll set up. You know, we have the entertainment in the arena, Flint Rasmussen. He'll be entertaining you throughout the whole show, mostly during TV commercial breaks, just to keep the crowd involved, you know, while we're loading bulls and going to another commercial or whatever. He's going to be there. And there's a lot of entertainment going on. It's not just a bunch of country music and, you know, it's rock and roll and rap. You know, they keep the energy jacked up in there and pumped up for us to ride. And then you throw bull riding in the mix. What else do you want to see?
How much longer are you going to do this, Sean?
We're just going to take it one bull at a time.
One jump at a time.
That's right.
We're going to wish you luck this year. Hopefully you'll do better than you did
last
year.
I like
right?
it. I like it. Hey, I can't do any worse, I can tell you that.
Oh, it can only get better.
That's right.
Well, you know the bulls you're already riding, right?
Yeah, well, I don't really know them. I know the names, and that's about it.
Okay, if I were to put you on the spot right now, can you recall their names?
The first one's Dixie Explosion, and then the next one is Getting Hammered.
Those are the names of the bulls.
I like the second one's name.
Would it help a bull rider to get hammered before you get on Get Hammered?
Oh, I don't know. It did when I was 24 and 25, I think. I said an interview when I was younger that I really thought that I rode bulls better hungover because I had, you know, the stats showed I won the majority of my major events and I was still hungover. So I used to be like, man, I just need to go out and be hungover because I perform better. But now I don't think I can do that at my age. Them hangovers last a lot longer than they used to.
Yeah, it's not as much fun, is
it? No, I don't think it'd be near enjoyable at 37 than it would be at 22.
And that's just part of our conversation with professional bull rider Sean Willingham on Gwinnett Business Radio. To hear more, visit businessradiox.com, select the Gwinnett Studio, and then click on Gwinnett Business Radio. Up next, it's tax season, so we'll hear from a local tax expert about some of the top mistakes small business owners are making that's costing them money. You're listening to North Georgia Business Radio and the best of Business Radio X. Welcome back to North Georgia Business Radio and the best of Business Radio X. It's tax season. And did you know that small business owners collectively overpay their taxes by $1 billion each and every year? Many business owners don't take advantage of deductions that they're entitled to. On this week's episode of The Bottom Line with Jacqueline Sheldon, hosts Tom and Jacqueline Sheldon shared some of the biggest mistakes that small business owners are making that's costing them money.
We're talking about the top 10 mistakes that cost small business owners their money, and this is somewhat around deductions that they could take that they don't take. Am I on the right track with that?
You are.
You are. Good. Good. We're going to skip ahead to one. Let's talk about home office deductions. Let's start off the second segment with that because this affects a lot of people. Now, in the past, I was always told that home offices, the deductions for home offices, were a huge red flag for audits. The IRS focused on those. Is that true? Yes, no, past, present?
It's really not true anymore, Tom. Back many years ago, office and home was a red flag on tax returns, but the IRS has changed the rules on that several times in the last 20 years, and they've really relaxed the rules on home office deduction. So as long as you qualify, and to qualify, that means that you have a place in your home that's used regularly and exclusively for business purposes, and that you use that office to perform administrative or management services for your business, then chances are you qualify for a home office deduction. And that can add up to several thousand dollars in additional tax deduction that you can take on your tax return.
I use my kitchen table to do business. Does that count? Can I write off my whole kitchen?
You cannot write off your kitchen. There again, it goes back to a area in your home used regularly and exclusively for business. So you do need a separate area in your
home. Exclusively for business. But now the hallway, I have to walk down the hallway to get to my office.
No, that does not
I can't write the hallway off either?
No.
That's no fun. I take it that's a percentage of the home.
Right. Your deduction, what you're going to do is you're going to take the square footage of your home office space and you're going to divide it by the total square footage of your home. That's going to give you the business use percentage.
Right.
And then you're able to deduct that percentage of the utilities that you pay on your home, your repairs and maintenance, your taxes, your insurance, the different costs of operating your home. You can take that as a business deduction.
I know the answer to this question. Documentation, documentation, documentation. That's what you have to provide to do this.
Yeah, you do want to keep good documentation on anything that you deduct on your tax return. But, yeah, definitely want to measure that square footage, make sure you've got that measured out. And then you want to make sure you keep good records on the repairs and maintenance that you make to your house, your utility bills, those kind of things.
As a small business owner, my business often involves driving of company vehicles, a small fleet of vehicles. Now, there are mileage deductions, correct?
There are.
How does that work? I know if you can take actual expense on a vehicle, you can take mileage expense on a vehicle.
Right. You have a couple different options when it comes to business use of automobile. You can take the standard mileage rate, which for 2019 is 58.5 cents a mile. Or you can take the business use percentage of actual expenses, which would be your gas, your insurance, your repairs and maintenance, and then you actually depreciate the cost of a vehicle. So there's two different ways that you can deduct mileage expenses. Regardless of which way you go, though, it's very important that you keep a mileage log and you track those business miles versus personal miles. And there's so many apps out there now that you can download on your phone that makes mileage tracking really easy. So you definitely want to look into those.
You have to, again, you have to document it. You have to document it. But someone, if not yourself, a tax professional, needs to take the time to see which is a better route to go.
Right. You always want to weigh the options and see. Normally, I find if a client drives a lot of miles, standard mileage comes out better. If they don't drive a lot of business miles, actual oftentimes will come out better. But you always want to look at it and see which is going to be the best deduction. Now, I will tell you, once you decide to take actual expenses on a vehicle, then you're locked into taking actual expenses for as long as you have that vehicle. So first year you take standard mileage rate, great. Second year you can look at it and say, do I want to do standard mileage or do I want to do actual? If you decide to go actual in the second year, then you're locked into actual expenses.
I would imagine also that the type of vehicle you drive would possibly enter into this. Great on gas, and maybe not so great on gas.
Right. We find that usually, your
new vehicle, old vehicle.
Your SUVs, your larger vehicles, you know, your operating costs on those are higher.
Right.
So those oftentimes actual expenses will come out better on those.
So you really truly have to take the time. And that's the mistake that small business owners make. They don't take the time to weigh the options, which one to use.
Right, and you definitely want to look at it both ways because you don't want to leave money on the table.
Exactly. Something that I think there's a little cloudy because I know it's been changed around by law is meals and entertainment. Small business owners don't write off, can write off, they should, they shouldn't, when it comes to meals and entertainment. Can they still?
Well, the new tax law, originally when it was proposed, they had decided to take away business meals and entertainment. But when the final law was written, they did leave business meals as deductible. So small business owners can still deduct business meals. You can no longer deduct business entertainment, though.
Gotcha. And the mistake is no documentation, let me guess.
Yeah, you want to keep good documentation on business meals because the IRS says for those meals to be deductible, there had to either be a business meeting in place. You had to have met with a client, a prospect, a vendor. There had to be a business meeting take place for the meal, or you have to be out of town for a business purpose. So you want to keep good records on that as far as your business meals, who you met with, what the business purpose was, so you can substantiate that it was definitely a business meal and that you just didn't drive through McDonald's and grab a cheeseburger.
Well, that was going to be my next question. If I leave my first meeting, my first appointment, I stop at Starbucks, I get a coffee. Okay, everyone knows me, I'm too cheap for Starbucks. But I get a cup of coffee, and then on my way to my second appointment, that cup of coffee isn't a write-off, is it?
It is not a deductible business meal, no.
Right. But now if I was out of state, it probably would be.
Right. If you were traveling out of state for business purposes,
of course,
then your meals while you're traveling, those can be deductible.
I got you. This is probably the biggest mistake that the small business owners make is they try to do everything themselves.
Right. Well, when it comes to your taxes, as we've talked before, tax laws are constantly changing. There's a lot to know. There's a lot of I's that have to be dotted and T's that have to be crossed to keep deductions within the IRS scrutiny so that they are allowable in case of audit. So you don't ever want to try to do it yourself. It's just too much to keep up with. Working with someone who is a tax planner is always key, someone that will help you know what deductions are available, help you maximize those deductions so that they can help you lower your tax liability is key if you're really looking to reduce the amount of taxes that your small business pays every year.
Yeah, I'm a small business owner. I'm trying to compete. I'm trying to put my mark on the world. Keeping up with tax laws is something I don't know if I have the mental capacity to do it, but let alone I don't have the time to do it.
Right.
That is why we have a professional taking care of it for us.
Well, that's it. You have a full-time job just keeping up with the tax law changes. So having someone who does that for a living is very important.
So having a tax plan, or at least it sounds to me, having a tax plan is very, very important.
It is.
So how in the world does this work?
Well, what we do when we do a tax plan for a client is we'll do what's called a discovery session. We'll have them send us 2 years worth of past tax returns, and we'll review those returns, and we're looking for missed opportunities, maybe missed deductions, things that they might do differently going forward that would help save them money. By looking over the tax returns, we feel like they're a candidate for a tax plan. Then we will actually go through a longer review. We'll ask them a lot of questions, have them do a questionnaire, and then we'll put together a comprehensive tax plan that gives them a step-by-step guide of the different tax laws that they may want to be able to take advantage of, the different deductions that they could take advantage of, and what those would save them in tax dollars.
It starts out basically you're a second set of eyes.
Exactly.
And that doesn't cost anything, does it?
No, we do the discovery session. The initial discovery session is free. We'll do that at no charge. And we'll take a look and see if there's anything we can do to help you save money.
And that's what you do best.
That's what we enjoy.
That is the bottom line, right?
That is the bottom line.
And that's just some of the conversation on The Bottom Line with Jacqueline Sheldon on Business Radio X. To hear the entire show, visit businessradiox.com, click on the Gwinnett Studio, and then select The Bottom Line.
Well, that's it for now. Business Radio X lets you hear from the top business leaders, executives, managers, and business owners in our communities, allowing them to share their stories of success. Today's interviews are just a few of thousands that you can hear anytime, 24/7, by visiting the voice of business, businessradiox.com. Until next time, I'm Mike Salmond, and this has been North Georgia Business Radio and the best of Business Radio X.